Okay. Well, unfortunately, last week the tape recorder stopped after 8 minutes, so a lot of that class was not recorded, although the notes are up. There were a couple outstanding issues. Before we're going to start learning some of the laws of kashrus, we're just finishing up the last section about immersing utensils in the mikvah. And there were two issues that we were left outstanding. The bracha of, if you tovel one dish, we said was al tfilas keli, and if you tovel two items, it's al tfilas kelim. And then we discussed, well, what if you're not sure if you should immerse an item? Then we said, well, you do it without a bracha, or you take an item that needs to be immersed, and you make the bracha on the one that needs to be immersed, and then the other one that you're not sure about will be covered by that bracha. Someone asked, well, what bracha would you make there? Would it be the plural form or the singular form? So I said, I think it'll be the plural form. So I checked it out. Yes, it is. So it's the plural form. So if you have items that really don't need a bracha, you're not sure if they need a bracha, and you want to choose an item to make the bracha on, one is sufficient, and you'll still make the bracha of al tefilas kelim. That was the one outstanding issue. The second outstanding issue was the candy dishes. So I went, looked again, and as I suspected, it is so. So again, just to review for those who weren't here last week, if you buy a dish of candy, okay, and there are candies on the dish, and the dish is made out of an item that would require going to the mikvah. I'm not going to go over the whole thing that we discussed last week, but basically we said that the only person who should toivel things in a mikvah is who? The owner of the item, and not people who are planning on giving gifts. They do not toivel the item. The store owners do not toivel the items before they're sold. So therefore, if you're going to the candy store and you're buying candies on it with a dish to give to someone else, and that dish is, let's say, made out of glass, that requires tefillah, immersion in the mikvah, so you've created a problem. So I'm saying initially you really shouldn't do it, because as soon as the person receives the dish, at that point they'd have to take it to the mikvah, and there's candy sitting on it. So therefore, if you receive such a dish, if you're on the receiving end, you smile politely and say, thank you very much. And then when the person leaves, immediately remove all the candies from the dish and put it somewhere else. And then take the candy dish to the mikvah. Okay? Best for you, if you're giving, not to give such a dish, because you're creating problems. Oh, but I love these people. I want to give them a dish. So we could give them candy separately and the dish separately. Give it to them in the box. The dish in the box. Here is a can. You do it like this. You get a box, nice big box, and then, right, then you get a cheap plastic dish to put the candies on it, and now you make a nice ribbon and a bow and everything on top, and that's why you're giving them the dish separated from the candies, and therefore they don't have to toss out the candies from the dish, and they can take the dish to the mikvah as they please, okay? Or if you don't want to do that, I said also, buy yourself dishes that you're going to use, and use them once or twice for your own personal use, and then give that dish away. Then you can honestly say it was toveled, and they don't have to tovel. If your whole intent is you want to save them the trouble of toveling, as we said last week, if you tovel what you're not supposed to tovel, you have not saved them, and you've only created problems for them, and therefore either you're going to own those dishes and toivel them for your own use and use them and then give them to others, then there's not a problem, or the other method that I suggested. Okay, so that, I hope, clarifies the issue. Okay, good. Final point of section 9, the method of tefillah. Yes, ma'am.
To not embarrass your guests, can you just take the candy off and put it in your dish?
To not embarrass your guests. So how are you not embarrassing them by taking it off their dish and putting it on your dish?
Maybe before, make a bigger dish of other things.
Well, you have to do it very discreetly. I leave it to your discretion.
But the question is,
I mean, really, you should, you know, just, you know, put it away and somewhere, you know. I mean, you don't have to do it that minute. I mean, I just, if they want those candies served, then you're going to have to take it out. Depends who's doing it. If it's a firm person, you can even teach them something. You could say, oh, that's so nice of you. I'll take this out and put it on another dish. Because, obviously, this was not toveled yet, and I can't use it yet. I don't know. You'll have to figure out the discretionary part of it. But it's, you know, obviously, if someone just drops it off, let's say on Purim, where you're getting all kinds of stuff, and you don't have time to deal with this. I mean, you don't have to take it right out of the dish that minute, because, you know, you're busy with a Purim suit and giving out Shalach Manos. But when you get around to it, and you're finally going to deal with those things, you got to take them out. So I guess if you're not planning on using it that night at all, then just leave it in its bag. Just leave it. And then when they leave, take it out, whatever. Okay. Method of tefillah. How do you immerse utensils in a mikveh? You'd be surprised people make mistakes on this too. Well, the first point is the water must reach all parts of the utensil inside and outside of it. So let's say if you have a glass, you know, you don't do the glass upside down, so water does not get in the inside. You do it straight down, so water gets inside and all around. The utensil is completely covered. And B, the entire utensil must be immersed under the water all at the same time, which is not the same when it comes to koshering things. You can kosher things one bit at a time. This, the whole thing has to be under the mikveh, just like when a person goes to the mikveh, the entire person has to be under the mikveh. The entire utensil has to be inside the mikveh. Now, when you're immersing it, you should be holding it loosely in your hands, because where your hand is touching the item, that itself is not allowing the water to go in there. So you should hold it loosely. But you're going to say, wait, if I hold it loosely, it might slip out of my hands and they'll go all the way to the bottom. And if it's, you know, I know stories of people who've taken glass to the mikveh, not the kalim mikveh, to the real mikveh, and a lot of their hands went to the bottom, crashed into little pieces, and that's a big headache. They got to drain the whole mikveh, clean out the water. That's a big expense. So anyway, but you have to let all the water get to it. So you have to hold it lightly. If you're afraid you're going to hold it lightly, it's going to fall. So then what do? So you got one of three options. Either change your grasp on the utensil while it's under the water, which means, you know, let's say this was the utensil, and let's say I'm under the water, I'm holding it tightly. So you got to watch my fingers very quickly. You do that. A real quick, let go and get it right back. So that one moment you let go, the water goes in between, and that takes care of that. That's one way of doing it. Or first place your hand in the water, and then rest the utensil in it. Let's say this is under the water. My hand's here, and I put it here, and now I take it. That's another way. Or moisten your hands with water from the mikveh, and then hold the utensil with your wet hands. So those are the three options to doing proper immersion in that. Okay, next. Utensils may be placed inside a netted sack, basket, or other utensil, and then immersed, like you find in some kalim mikvehs. Now, interesting, though, you got to be careful here. A number of utensils may be placed in the sack or basket next to one another, and you could do it at the same time, but not on top of one another. If you think, oh, I'll take a whole bunch of silver, I'll just put it all in the basket, dip it, one dip, and whoa, that was so easy. Well, that's not good, because as one utensil's at another, that creates a barrier between the water and those two utensils where they meet. So you can put them next to each other. Have many done it one time, but not on top of each other. When part of a utensil requires tefillah is made from material that does not require tefillah, let's say one part of the item is made out of glass and the other part connected with it is plastic, still the whole utensil should be immersed, everything. Okay, utensils which are receptacles, like glasses, as I said, should always be immersed sideways or face up so all the water gets into it. Utensils with narrow openings like bottles should be left in the mikvah long enough to be filled completely with water so that they're totally filled in. Okay, you only have to toivel it once. That's all it needs. And obviously, you should have the proper kavana, the proper concentration, understanding why you're doing the mitzvah, to you're intending to remove the non-Jewish impurity, as it were, from that utensil as you're doing it. So that, I believe, finishes the laws of immersing items in the mikvah. So now that we've got our items are fine, so now we go to kashrut. Okay, now I know some of these things are going to be obvious, but I would imagine not everything. That's how I think with all these things. I'm not suggesting that you don't know kashrus. I'm just saying something we go over from the beginning to make sure that there aren't any misconceptions. And there's usually always something new, I hope. And if not, then it was just a review. Okay, let's start with the first section, the prohibition of eating meat and dairy. So, first for starters, this might be the first misunderstanding. The almost universal accepted tradition amongst Jews is to wait 6 full hours before dairy after meat. Period. Okay? Now, only if you are a legitimate Dutch Jew, okay, and you have from a Dutch background, okay, that have a custom of eating dairy after a shorter period of time, where they say after reciting an after blessing on it, and they only wait 1 hour in cleaning the mouth. Okay, if you're a Dutch Jew, they have that custom. You can't say, well, since there are Dutch Jews that do that, so I'm going to do that. That's absolutely incorrect. You cannot do that. So, and well, if you're from a Germanic descent, they wait 3 hours after eating meat. So again, if you have for sure follow all these kinds of Germanic customs, which are many, you can't just pick and choose. Like if you really are a German Jew, that means boys who are not bar mitzvah wear a tallis and all other kinds of things. And they always come on time, German Jews. All right. But you have to keep all their customs. You can't just, you know, can't just pick and choose. So therefore, unless you're Dutch or German, you have to wait 6 full hours from one meal to the next meal. Okay, that's number one. Nevertheless, the custom may be disregarded in the following circumstances. If, let's say, you are suffering from an ailment or even a nursing woman, that you have to have dairy foods often, okay? And let's say you've had a meat meal, and for whatever medical reasons, it is clearly said that you have to have a lot of dairy. Then you can wait 1 hour after making the after blessing on the prior food and cleaning out your mouth. 1 hour would be okay. Okay, another exception is for, let's say, you're feeding a baby. Okay, you don't have to wait 6 hours when feeding a baby that's, let's say, 3 years or younger. You don't have to wait at all. If you gave him meat, as soon as he finished giving him meat, you can give him his bottle, you can give him milk. That's not a problem. A little infant. When the kid gets older, 3 years and older, you should already start to have him wait about an hour, if possible, before giving him dairy, unless they're going to throw tantrums and you're going to get sick. But generally speaking, by 3 years old, you should already start waiting. As they get older, you start to wait older and older. So, and really, a child after the age of 6 already, when they're smart enough, they should wait 6 hours after eating meat, unless, you know, it's an unusual circumstance. And clearly, by 9 years old, they have to totally live as an adult. So, that you got to get them used to it. So, and there's no reason not. I don't think it's a problem. I never had a problem with any of my kids. I mean, even from 6 years old, they don't have to wait. They should wait. Now, here's an interesting situation. What if you did not wait 6 hours, and now you got some? You forgot that you were fleishigs. You had fleishigs for lunch, let's say, and now it's mid-afternoon, and you have a nice ice cream, and you make the bracha on the ice cream, and right before you bite into it, oh my goodness, I'm fleishigs. That ever happened to anybody? You wouldn't admit it, but anyway. So what do you do? I mean, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You made a bracha. But you have to wait. So if I'm having the dairy, I'm sinning by having the dairy. But if I don't have the dairy, I'm sinning by making a wasted bracha. So the answer is, as long as an hour has passed, you can just taste a little bit of the dairy product. Just taste it a little bit, and that's it. So, you know, that's the lesser of the two evils. Just a little taste, and then put it away. Okay, now, this law of waiting 6 hours applies in all kinds of situations. Even if one mistakenly had an entire dairy meal within the six-hour time frame. Let's say you forgot all about your fleishiks, and now you went and had a complete dairy meal. You still got to finish 6 hours before you're going to have any more dairy. You can't say, well, since I already messed up big time, what does it matter? No, you still got to wait that six-hour interval before eating dairy again. Now, this was a problem. I don't know how often that's a problem for you, but when we were in Kollel many, many moons ago, when they did things in a proper way, you know, a bris really, you know, I don't want to get into bris now, but usually a bris really should be fleishiks. So in the Kollel, like for breakfast, you'd have cold cuts and chicken. So, and you know, when you had that, you'd have to remember at lunchtime that you're fleishiks. And usually lunch was a dairy meal. So, and in the yeshiva, they served milk and all those things. So that's when it really became an issue. You have to be cognizant of the 6 hours over there. Okay, next. Point four.
One question, when you said about you still have to wait the six-hour time frame, then do you have to wait the 6 hours from the
From the time you ate meat. From the time you ate meat. From the time, you don't have to wait more. We don't punish you. The taste of the meat can only be so long, so it doesn't get made longer. Now, here, point four, what are the 6 hours counted? 6 hours are not counted from the end of the meat meal. It's counted from the end of actually eating the meat, when you've stopped eating meat. So this can come into play in summer Shabbatot, where let's say you had lunch, Shabbos lunch at 12. Okay, 12:30, whatever. And the main course with the meat was finished by 2 o'clock. Okay, but you still had other courses following that, or even you finished the meat, but then you still had some vegetables and this, and then was dessert, and then was this and that, and you didn't bench till 4 o'clock. So at what point may you have dairy for Shalosh Udos? So when you finished eating the meat. So if you know it, that's why in the summer you should be cognizant when you finished eating the meat and you're no longer eating meat. So you finished eating the meat at 2 o'clock, even though you didn't bench till 4, you can eat dairy at 8. That's exactly when the meat was finally finished. So that's a thing you got to be careful with. Now, of course, that leads us to the next point. What if you don't know the exact time you finished eating the meat? So, again, you know, you have to approximate when you finished eating the meat of the meal and, you know, base it on that. So I guess you would want to err on the side of caution to be a little bit more strict. But you have to best guess what 6 hours would be. Now, there's some very interesting reasons why we wait 6 hours. The reason why we wait 6 hours, the Talmud gives two reasons. One reason is there can still be some meat still caught in your mouth, in your teeth, and things like that, number one. And number two, the meat, the fatty taste still is, you know, exists in your mouth and in your throat. The fatty material is still around over there. And therefore, it comes out interesting applications of the halacha, such as in number six. Even if one who merely chews meat, chewing it, let's say you're chewing it for your child, little baby to eat, or food cooked with meat fat, it's parv technically, but meat fat there, so let's say chickens, whatever, but you're chewing it, chewing something, but it's meaty, without swallowing, but you still chewed it, so you still have to wait 6 hours on that, even though you didn't actually consume meat. Okay? However, you could be lenient and you don't have to wait if you cleaned your teeth thoroughly after chewing the meat. If you flossed it and brushed it and all that, okay, then you wouldn't have to wait 6 hours. Now, what about, this happens often, what if you merely are tasting the meat with your tongue and you immediately remove it from your mouth? Or let's say you're tasting the chicken soup on Friday, let's say you're making chicken soup, I don't know, Friday morning. Okay, you're tasting it. So if you don't swallow it, and you spit it out, then you're not required to wait 6 hours. If you're tasting the chip, if you taste it and swallow it, then you got to wait the 6 hours. Okay, so that's regarding that. What if you take a meat vitamin, a vitamin that's made out of meat, just swallow it, and for whatever reason you know it was made out of meat, yeah, that does not require you to wait at all, and you could drink milk right afterwards. I wouldn't suggest taking the pill with the milk, but right after. So it's taking a meat vitamin, maybe the kosher vitamins may have that, or let's say even for health reasons, you have to eat not kosher meat vitamin. Doesn't matter. You don't have to wait 6 hours. Now, what if before you're ready to take that ice cream, you notice there's a piece of meat caught in your teeth even after 6 hours? So you have to remove that meat, eat something else that's not dairy, and rinse your mouth out, and then you could have the dairy. So you should always check your mouth. If you had a steak earlier in the day for lunch, and then you want to have dairy afterwards, you should just be careful there's no meat caught in your teeth. Now, a question for the elderly. What about dentures? Are dentures fleischigs or milchigs, whatever? So dentures are treated like regular teeth. So they don't, not fleischigs, not milchigs. It's just like regular teeth, and you don't have to worry about it. Okay, now we get to some interesting ones. These are the ones that are often asked of a rabbi. So this will save you many questions to ask. I'm not going to get into every what if kind of case because there's still, you know, it gets too technical, but some are pretty often, so you might as well mention them. So point 10, what if you ate par food cooked with meat, right? Let's say a chicken soup. So all you had was clear broth, but it was still cooked with chicken soup. Or one who eats clear meat or chicken broth may not eat dairy before the conclusion of the 6 hours. You cannot do that. You are momish fleischigs. I didn't eat any meat. No. It was in the pot with the meat. It was just the soup. Doesn't matter. You cannot do that. And for that matter, you can't even eat par foods cooked with dairy under those circumstances initially. So you've got to wait 6 hours. Now, here come the interesting ones. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 all go together. Okay? So these are the standard kashrus questions that are asked, and it's good to just keep these notes handy in case this happens. Okay? Now, obviously, I don't have to mention to you that we don't cook milk in a fleischig pot. You don't cook meat in a milchig pot. I don't have to tell you that. You know you don't do that. And you know it trafes up the pot. Okay. And it could trafe up the food as well. Not always. It depends a lot on many factors. That's when you call the rabbi. Again, it's a good thing to call a rabbi because I've had umpteen cases where people write me shilas, this and this happened. Of course, we threw out the food. We just want to know what to do with the pot and the fork. And I respond, it's too bad you didn't call me earlier. You did not have to throw out the food. So you should know, whenever you have these shilas, unless it's so black and white, more often than not, you don't have to throw out the food. More often than not, you don't even have to kasher the utensils. So it's always good to ask. That's in general, and the rabbis don't mind answering those kinds of questions. So here's some, now in between cases, that is a little bit more tricky. So let's, 11 is still not so tricky. Okay, one who ate par food that was cooked in a clean meat pot. Okay, even if it wasn't scrubbed so well, you don't have to wait 6 hours before eating dairy. Okay, just the pot was the wrong pot. Doesn't matter. It's par food. You don't have to wait. Not a problem. Okay. Now, here's the next one. How about if you're going to have a meat meal or a dairy meal, whatever it is, and you want to cook par food with a pot that's opposite of the meal that you're planning on serving? Okay. Let's say you're planning on having a fleischig meal. It's going to be fleischig. It's going to be chicken and everything's there. And you need to cook rice, all right? And you want to use a dairy pot to cook rice, which is parv. You will follow? And you want to serve the rice at the fleischig meal. Okay, so you could say, well, what's the problem? The pot is is clean pot. So you can never do that initially. That's point 12. One should not initially, you got to know between initially and after the fact. Initially, do not cook parv food in a dairy or meat pot with the intention to eat it with the opposite food later on. Okay, that's clear. You should not do that initially. But then we always get the question, but I did. Now what do I do? Now there's going to be some differences we go through between Sfaradim and Ashkenazim. I'm giving you only according to Ashkenazim over here. Okay, so usually, I think most ladies know not to do, you know, that. But the call comes when the mistake already happened. But I already cooked it. What do I do? So it depends on a lot of factors. And now it gets interesting. 13. If you already did cook par food in a dairy meat pot, now, there's two terms we have to remind you of. And this is why when you ask these shilas, the rabbi will ask you certain questions. Now, a pot is either called, or a utensil, whatever, is either called a ben yomo or a not ben yomo. Now, what does that mean? Literally, ben yomo means was used within the last 24 hours with heat. So let's say you cooked a pot, you cooked chicken in a pot, and then you finished the chicken, you took the chicken out of the pot, you cleaned the pot. So that pot is called ben yomo for 24 hours from when the chicken was cooked in that pot. So if let's say you cooked the chicken at 4 o'clock, it was hot in the pot till 5 o'clock, you emptied it out of the pot, you washed out the pot. So from 5 o'clock on, for the next 24 hours, that utensil is called a ben yomo. That's a pot, a fork, a spoon, anything, but provided it was hot. If it's not hot, it never becomes a ben yomo. Now, you're going to see there's the issue here is a fleishik pot in many ways has to be treated like a piece of meat. Okay, that's the issue over here. A fleishik pot has to be treated like a piece of meat. So if you cook something in a fleishik pot, it could be considered like the food inside, even though it's parv, could be meat. So that's why you have to understand these terms over here. And that's why when the rabbi will ask you, did you use in the last 24 hours, he's asking you, was this pot or was this utensil a ben yomo? And again, only if it was used with hot. If it wasn't used with hot, if let's say you just put some milk in a cup, cold milk in a cup, it doesn't make it a ben yomo because it wasn't hot. All right? So now, right? I'm just defining what a ben yomo is. I haven't explained any laws yet. You have to know the term. Once 24 hours have passed, it's called a not ben yomo, and the degree of severity is lessened greatly because the Talmud gives a principle that after 24 hours, we assume that there is really no taste left in the pot to impart a fleishiks. That now, how that works, why that works, that's beyond what I want to talk about. But that's what we have to realize. 24 hours, that's the key. Has it been used within the last 24 hours or not? That will depend on how much of that taste is imparted into the par food. Now, so therefore, generally you could know. So then I sometimes ask, well, what about, I asked you, when was the last time you used a pie? I said, I don't remember. That's another typical answer I get. That's okay. It's nothing wrong with people. You know, if you knew you were going to trafe something up, you would have remembered in advance. But that's, you know, why should I remember? I'm not going to get you to be neurotic. Oh, okay, now just finished cooking. I'm going to write down 326 in case. No one's going to do that. So if I said, well, when was the last time you used? Or let's say you're taking a pot out of your pantry, wherever you keep your pots, you pull one out. You know, so we generally assume, unless you know otherwise, that they have not been used within 24 hours. That's a general assumption. You usually have a pretty good memory if you use something within the last 24 hours or not. So, but if I said, was it used last 24 hours? I don't know. So, rabbi will assume an I don't know is it was not. That's what you use. I'm only asking what a ben yomo is, yeah?
So let's say the pot was used within 24 hours, but it wasn't. It's a fleishik pot, but it wasn't used for fleishiks. Is it still a ben yomo?
It's not a ben yomo. Okay. It's not a ben yomo. Oh, that's a good question. Let's say you used a fleishik pot and you cooked water in it, so there was no meat in it. So that doesn't make a difference. The point being, you have meat, actual meat, or actual dairy was cooked in that pot within the last 24 hours, that's what makes it a ben yomo. Okay? Now, again, doesn't matter to that, to point 12. Point 12, I don't care if it was a ben yomo or not, you never initially would cook parv in a fleishik or milchik pot, because, and then you want to go and serve the with the opposite food average. You never do that ever. Okay, just good rule of practice. Now we're speaking about after the fact. Okay, you cooked parv in a pot, and it was, okay, now you're calling Rabbi, oh, and I know I used this pot 6 hours ago to cook meat in it. Now the pot's clean now, but now I cooked rice in it. Now, can I eat that together with the opposite food now? Okay, I want to serve the rice now at the fleishik, at the dairy meal, right, with the food of the opposite. So if you know that in advance, you should not eat it together with the opposite food, according to Ashkenazim. All right, you got it with me here? So you cook the rice up in the wrong utensil. It was a ben yomo. Then you cannot serve that rice together to be eating with meat or the opposite food there. Okay? That's what you cannot do. But what you could do is, what you could still do is, you could put it on a plate of the opposite food, just on a plate. Remember, it was, you cooked par food. It was par food. Cooked, let's say, cooked par food in a fleishik pot. If you want, you can just put it on a dairy plate, which would therefore mean, well, Rabbi, put it on a dairy plate afterwards, so it's okay. And also what you can do, very important, you may eat the par food during the course of the meal of the opposite food, provided it's not actually eaten together with that food. So let me give you a few scenarios. I think these are the most common questions that you get over here, right? So let's say you cooked rice in the wrong dish, right? And now you want to serve it during the course of the meal. So let's say it was a milchik dish, and you did cook milk in it recently, and now you cooked rice in it, and now you want to serve the rice together with your steak. You cannot, if it's a ben yomo, if that pot was used recently, that first pot, you cannot eat it together with your steak. You cannot. Okay? You can't mix it up with nothing. What you could do is, let's say in that pot you baked muffins. Dessert. Aha. Now, you may serve that muffins during the course of the meal after you've had the steak and you're no longer eating any steak. You may have it during the meat meal, but not together with the meat. So that often happens. I've had it many times. You cook dessert in the wrong pot, in the wrong baking dish, right? I'm having fleishiks, and I made my most, you know, my prize-winning dessert, and I made it in a milchik thing. Oh, no, it's my husband's birthday, isn't that? It's okay, as long as it's parv. It's, the item was parv, right? So you could serve it after as dessert, because you're not eating it at the same time. Okay. No, you're mixing things up. Again, if you have a pot, right, you baked in a milchik pot something that's parv, right, it's not a problem. You could serve it afterwards, all right? You might be mistaken with something else.
Well, I don't know if I'm jumping the gun. So what happens if it's leftovers? Say,
what's leftovers?
So you cook the rice in the milk pot, you cook the rice in the milk pot, because you're having a dairy meal, and then the next day the kids want the rice with something.
Oh, so you say, what about using that? Well, then you have to know how careful you are. You know, it's not recommended. You heard her question? She made rice in a par of rice for a milchik meal where they had milchiks. And now you have leftover rice in the pot. You want to serve that at a fleishik meal.
The next day.
So, I mean, theoretically you could, but practically, you might not want to, because when you're serving rice at a dairy meal, how careful are you to make sure that no dairy somehow got into that pot? Now, if you're very careful, then you could. But, you know, you have all kinds of people who eat at a meal, especially children. So when you have children, you always have to be strict, because you see this all the time, right? Now, adults know there's a serving spoon that you have in the pot of rice to which you've kept and you just serve it and you put it onto somebody's plate and you put it back. Sometimes there's people at the table, they take the fork that they're just eating and they stick their fork into the serving plate and they put it there so they could get some milk, it can get in there. So the answer to your question is, if you're absolutely certain that no dairy got mixed into that rice, you could serve it for fleishigs. I wouldn't recommend it, because how could you always be served? But if you are, some homemakers are very particular, you know, that there's a special serving spoon and a serving, and we don't double dip and all this stuff, and things don't get mixed up. So, okay, technically you could.
But can that rice go on a meat plate?
When it was cooked on a meat plate?
No, it wasn't cooked. It was cooked in a
Was it used within 24 hours or not? If the milk pot was a ben yomo, then we shouldn't be serving this rice together with meat. Right?
So it mustn't go on the plate.
It shouldn't. It's the same rule. Even though you served it for dairy now, but you can't eat it together with meat if it was a ben yomo. The fact that you have a dairy meal in the middle doesn't change the law. Okay, now, where am I? Let me just finish 13. Okay, now let's take it a step further now. Okay, it's pretty clear if it's a ben yomo, again, a ben yomo should not be served at the opposite meal, together in eating with the opposite food. It should not be served with fleishigs, with it mamish. You're having rice and meat, right? And meat? No. It could be served after or before, right? Now, what if you didn't remember that you had cooked it in the dairy pot? And let's say it was rice, and you making stuffed cabbage with rice and hamburger, stuffing into the cabbage. Are you with me? You're making stuffed cabbage? Right? So you cooked rice in a dairy pot that was ben yomo. Right? Right? You cooked rice, part of rice, in a dairy pot that was used within the last 24 hours. You didn't realize it. And now you take the rice and you're putting it together with your chopped meat and stuffing it into the cabbage. And then you realize that the pot was used for dairy before. Okay? This is after the fact extreme. Right? So the food may be eaten after the fact. Okay, food may be eaten because there wasn't any actual meat or dairy, the actual milk in the first cooking. So those are the three layers. It's easy to remember. It's easy to remember. If it's a ben yomo, don't initially ever try this. Don't say, well, I want to cook it, so I'm going to serve it. No. If you did cook it in the dairy pot, all right, you may not eat it together with meat at the same time. You may eat it afterwards during the course of the meal, but not together with it. If by mistake it did get mixed up after the fact, you may eat it. Okay? So that's the layers of mistake. So that's all not that bad. All right? It's mostly a question of lechatchila initially. Initially, you shouldn't be serving it during a meal. And initially, you shouldn't be mixing it up. But if you mixed it up, then, okay, after the fact, we hold, you haven't trafed up anything. And that also will answer all your traf questions, right? It's not traf. Nothing's traf. If it's, it doesn't really make a difference. Now let's go to a non-benyomo. Non-benyomo, okay? 14, where obviously we're going to be more lenient. If you already did cook par food in a dairy pot, that was not a ben yomo. Now, again, you should not initially do that so that you can now eat it with the opposite food. You may eat it mixed together with the opposite food. So, therefore, if the rice was cooked in a dairy pot that was not used within 24 hours, you may serve it together with the meat at the meal. Okay, and obviously, if it's been mixed together already, for sure it's okay. Follow? Yeah, good. Just need to let it sit for a minute. Just got to review it. Just know there's within 24 hours is stricter. Obviously, it makes sense. It's logical. Within 24 hours, it's stricter. Less than 4 hours is more lenient. So stricter, stricter, stricter. So you don't cook it initially to serve with another meal. If it's ben yomo, and if you have cooked it, you still shouldn't serve it together while eating the meat. But at another part of the meal, you can. But if the thing is non-ben yomo and you already cooked it in the pot, you may mix it together with the opposite food. Okay?
Same plate.
Same plate, everything.
Meat plate.
Yes, with meat. With meat. If it's a non-ben yomo. If it's not ben yomo, you say, Rabbi, you know, I cooked the rice in the dairy pot, and this is the main ingredient to mix in now for the stuffed cabbage with the meat. Can I use this rice to stuff the cabbage? And I'm going to ask you one question. Did you use it in 24 hours or not? And that's going to make the difference. I said, yes, I did use the rice. Sorry, you can't mix it with the meat. I didn't use it in 24 hours. You may mix it with the meat. Okay?
What so, happens if that pot isn't clean properly, but you think it is? Isn't that a
if it's what? Thing? What? We assume it's clean properly.
But
we assume it's clean properly.
To take the chance that we
yes.
smoke and meat?
Yeah, again, here's the issue. Let's even theoretically say there was one. Now, you know, like, what are you going to have? Like a piece of chicken in the pot? No. Oh. So what are you going to have? Like a little, like a greeby, you know, like a little, I don't know what you, you know, a little, you know.
Grease, like
not great, a little bit. So now let's think about this. We know there's rules of nullification. And we know that 60 to 1 nullifies anything. So even if there was something, it's clearly been nullified 60 times by even 5 pieces of rice. Right? So there's, how much fleishigs could it be? So we're more worried about the absorption of that. And again, it's now this is going to, now don't make a mistake. Do not interpolate this if you let's say you cooked milk in a meat pot. Okay, that's already much more complicated. You call the rabbi. All right, I don't want to get into that. That's much more complicated. We're not talking about cooking milk in a meat pot, because then for sure you got major problems. You've trafed up the pot for sure, and now you have to call the rabbi and know, okay, it's the milk. We have to talk about the milk. Then there's going to be other factors we're going to look at. Okay, but we're talking about parf, why do you have to bother to call the rabbi if you can just learn these simple rules? I mean, it's fairly simple rules. If you can't memorize them, still just keep these sheets handy right here. It's first section, points 13. And that, you know, clearly does that for you. But that's a general rule. If a non-ben yomo is a relatively non-dangerous item in the kitchen, from a kosher's point of view. Yeah?
So when you're buying something that says dairy equipment,
when you're buying things, so we would assume that they are, now you don't know if they're ben yomo or not. So then we'd have to give them the stringencies of a ben yomo. Good question. Very good question. So give me an example. What does it say made in dairy? Let's say,
like the desserts or.
Like Oreo cookies that you're
going to... Oreo cookies. Very good. Oreo cookies. Very good example. Made on dairy equipment. We'd have to assume it's a ben yomo, so therefore you should not have Oreos with chicken.
But you could have them...
But you could have it as dessert. Exactly. That follows this rule. You could have it as dessert. Or let's say, I don't know, is there a filler that's made on dairy equipment, like rice or something like that? A filler. You know, something gets mixed with something. Made on dairy equipment.
Maybe like a power of vanilla pudding, I don't know. But let's say, hypothetically.
I don't know. Well, all I'm saying is, like, so, let's say, I know it's not, let's say rice was made on dairy equipment. You would not mix it together with your meat for your stuffed cabbage. Mm-hmm. So in other words, if it's made on dairy equipment, it may be eaten at a fleishig meal as long as you don't eat it with the meat at the same time. So, Oreo cookies can be served for dessert. So once you remember that, you can remember the concept. You could have it before the meal, as a, you know, before you're eating the meat, and any course of the meal, as long as it's not on the same course that you're eating meat. So good point, good question, yeah. We're going to get to that. That's lower. Do you treat it like fleishigs or milchigs? Leftovers? We're going to get to that. Is that what you're talking about? Or
yes.
We're going to get to that.
So one question as well. When you, we were saying earlier that you have to be careful if there's leftovers. Can you make the assumption that it remained parv through the meal in case somebody used like a spoon, whatever it is? So the question I have is that if, for example, you're not 100% sure and you eat one of those leftovers, like a piece of corn or some rice,
so we,
are you fleshy?
I'd assume you're not. You'd assume not. Again, there's always difference between, as we say, good kitchen kosher practice, call it, and then there's initial, and then there is after the fact. So, you know, initially we try to avoid these situations, but then after the fact, we don't want to throw away food that not necessarily has to be thrown away. So there's what we'll call good kitchen practice, where, you know, I served it at a dairy meal. Good practice would say don't serve it at a fleishig meal. That's just good practice.
But if you had it as, like, if you had it as a leftover, just that at another meal, like, okay, I'm just going to have the rice as another meal. Did that rice...
So again, we'd assume not. We'd assume not. There's no reason to assume that, to go that far. And even if there was, again, it would probably be nullified within 60 as well. Again, we don't initially try to nullify things as 60. For example, you know, what if I have a cholent and a drop of milk goes in? Well, of course, you can have the whole cholent because it got nullified. But can I say, well, you know, since it's going to get nullified anyway, I think it'd be really cool to put a little milk in there. And then they're not allowed to initially nullify things. That's the problem. And therefore, that's why even in kashrus, even though we say, well, how much could they have put in? It would have been less than a 1/60. But we don't initially do these things. We don't eat foods initially wrong. But you have to know after the fact, we know what can be done.
Rabbi, Karen has a very good point. I'm sorry, this is a very important for us. Okay, so you put rice in a milk pot. The next day you have...
Again, was it Ben Yom or not? You always have to say...
No.
It was not used?
It was within the 24 hours.
It was.
No, it was not.
You're mixing up. No, the pot, when I say a pot in 24 hours, it means the pot that you cooked in was cooked with the opposite in 24 hours. We're not talking about if you wait 24 hours afterwards. Don't. When we say 24 hours, we're not talking about that now I'm discussing the issue 24 hours later. We're talking about the pot that cooked the parv. Was it used within 24 hours? Again, so again, the pot cooked rice. What? So was the pot used within 24 hours the first time?
No. So then what could you do? How would you heat that rice with the chicken?
You could do it whatever you want because it hasn't been used in 24 hours. It could be initially eaten.
You treat it as though it's really...
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
And if it was?
If it was within 24 hours, then you initially wouldn't. You could put it on a pot. You could put it on a plate. You could warm it up in a fleishig pot. Warm it up in a fleishig pot. If it was, look, let's go back, right?
This is therapy.
13. If you already did cook food in a dairy pot that was a ben yomo, you should not eat it together with the opposite food. You may place the food on a plate of the opposite food. So you could obviously warm it up in a pot of the opposite food. You just can't eat it together with the opposite food.
Even the next day.
Doesn't matter. Next day doesn't change anything. Nothing changes because a day has passed. Nothing changed of a week has passed. The only thing is what happened what was with the pot before it was cooked with the parv.
Isn't it better just to be strict and not have parv and just have fleishigs and milchigs? Because if...
Is it better not... What do you mean not to have parv?
Well, not to do that at all then.
Well, so I read... Again, 12. One should not initially cook parv food in a dairy and meat pot.
To me, it would...
With the intention to eat it with the opposite food. But what if you don't have an intention to eat with the opposite food? Well, you want to just have parv. You could have a parv pot. You know, you want to have a parv pot. Listen, if you have a parv pot, you avoid all these issues. if you have a parv pot, you can cook rice in a parv pot all life long. You never have to worry where it's going to go afterwards.
But if you wash it carefully, right? Otherwise, you could make...
Well, you want... If you want to keep the parv pot parv, and it's not hard to keep it parv. Okay, I know you've already got 9 fleischig pots because you've made 9 parvons fleischigs. I know that's the next part of the therapy, right? You bought a parv ladle, and your husband went and put it into the fleischig soup, and you can't kosher it, and you've got 9 wooden parv ladles, fleischig ladles, because they messed up every parv one you had. I understand. But it's good to have parv equipment to keep the stuff parv. You want to have, you know, parv knives, parv pots, all these things to keep certain things parv, that you always make parv, because for those reasons, because you want to use for other things.
But if you don't have a parv pot and you cook rice in a meat pot, that rice, in my mind, is meat, and it never gets served with dairy. It's meat. Yeah.
Okay, but I'm telling you, it doesn't always have to be that way. You need to know the after the facts, because they are part of life. Life is after the fact. If everyone did everything correct and never made mistakes, the code of Jewish law would be much slimmer than it is now. But because people are human and they make mistakes, we have to. And, you know, do you want to throw out the food? If you look at, oh, it's fleischigs, you look at it as a fleischig, perfect. And then you mix it with dairy, then you're going to throw out the whole thing. Because you think, oh, I mixed meat and milk, right? If you're always treating that pot, I cooked the rice in a fleischig pot, as far as I'm concerned, it's meat. And then what happens? Then someone went and put it on a milk plate. Oh, I got a kosher of the plate. Oh, they mix it with milk. The food is straight. No, it's not. You have to know what the after the law is, so you don't throw out food unnecessarily. And you don't have to toivel things unnecessarily. Yiddishkeit is hard enough. Don't make it harder on yourself by throwing out food. You throw out the food, you got to make a new. You have to cook the food all over again. It causes stress. You start yelling at your husband. It's all becomes a factor. You want to be strict in one area. You try and wind up transgressing in other areas. So therefore, you need to know the after the fact laws so that you don't waste time, food, and money. Again, if you're not sure, if you're really not sure, we assume it's not a ben yomo. I mean, usually you could tell. I mean, certain pots, you know. I mean, certain pots, you know. Right? I'm just saying, certain pots, you know that you've been used. You know? I mean, sometimes you didn't cook for a day, then you know for sure it hasn't been used. And even, I don't know. I can usually tell. But generally, we'll assume it's not a ben yomo. Now, there's a few exceptions to all these rules I've mentioned. I want to leave that for the end, because if I would have done earlier, you'd have gone all crazy. Now, let's say for whatever reason, you just don't have a suitable pot to cook the parv food for the other food. Let's say you're having a fleischig meal, and for whatever reason, every milchig pot is used. You know, you have 2 basic pots you cook with, and you've made, you know, and they're filled with food, whatever. Or you don't have any. Nothing's available right now. Whatever. You don't have a suitable parv or fleischig pot to cook the parv for the upcoming fleischig meal. I don't know if it happens, because usually Jewish women have many pots. All I know, every time I open the thing, 20 pots come flying out. But let's say, if one, and I've had this asked before, if one has no other suitable pot, then, only then, you initially may cook parv food in a non-ben yomo dairy meat pot if you plan to eat it with the other kind of food. Because that's sort of an after the fact as well. Because I don't have another pot anyway. I don't have another pot. There's no, let's say, every fleischig pot has been used to cook food. I mean, not everybody's so wealthy. Some people only have a few pots in the house. Let's say you're doing a fleischig meal, right? So now you have, let's say, 3 good fleischig pots to cook. And guess what? You're cooking 3 fleischig things already in the meal. Now I need some rice, and I don't have any more fleischig pots to cook. And all I got left is a milchig pot to cook. If it's not a ben yomo, you may cook with that pot. Initially, even. Okay, that's one of these exceptions. And now comes another exception. All of the above is when the parv food was not sharp. Okay, if the parv food is sharp, now don't start asking me a million things, what's sharp, what's not sharp. You know, I'll give you a list of that maybe next week. Okay, but clearly onions are sharp. Garlic is sharp. Okay, that's for sure. There's no question about that. Radishes are, I mean, you know what sharp is. Sharp is sharp. You put your mouth, you know, sharp. Right? You put an onion in your mouth, your facial expression changes. Right? It does. You put garlic in your mouth, your facial expression changes. It's pretty, you know, lemon juice, a lemon, your face changes, right? So sharp has a whole, changes all the laws. So therefore, if the parv soup is sharp, like really spicy, really Mexican hot tamale spicy food, it's prohibited use of the other type under all conditions. We treat it like real fleischigs. Real fleischigs. Or if it's really sharp, a real hot, spicy thing you cooked up, you treat it as fleischigs. And don't ever have it anywhere during the course of the opposite meal. If you did, then that's a good time to ask the Rabbi Yeshayla exactly what happens.
But if there were onions in the soup and it's
not sharp. Okay, so those are, you ask, that's when you call the rabbi. Okay, there's too many factors. I can't get into every situation. Generally speaking, if it really isn't sharp, it really isn't sharp. That's the general rule. If just because you have an onion in there, it doesn't have to mean it's sharp. But a good example, a perfect example is, does anybody here make homemade chopped liver? That is the best example. Okay, you're frying onions in a dairy pot by mistake. Fry pan, right? The way my sons, they love making fresh chopped liver. Baruch loves making fresh chopped liver. I know you say, if you want chopped liver, just buy it from the store, right? But he, you know, so there's a whole science to it. Hey, mom, you fry the onions, and then you take some other spices, and then you take the liver and you grind up the liver and this. So now, by mistake, you fried the onions, and now the next part is you mix it with the liver. Cannot under any circumstances mix that with the liver. Even though it was fried in, it was parv, it's parv, but it was fried in a dairy pot. Even dairy pot's not a benyomo. Cannot put it with the liver. And if you put it with the liver, by mistake, you call the rabbi, and most likely you're going to throw it out. Most likely. So that is a big no-no. So sharp will come into play sometimes for that. All right. What's next? Oh, now let's see if we can finish this section. Okay, we're up to 17. One who drinks milk. Now the reverse. The reverse now. One who drinks milk and subsequently wishes to eat meat, and all you had was a liquid dairy, all you got to do is rinse your mouth. That's all you got to do. You can go right onto the meat. Some authorities require you also recite an after blessing over the milk beforehand. Some say you should make a bracha achron on the milk and then have the meat. Okay. In addition, one who ate cheese must wash his hands. Now, you're eating a solid milchix now. That what I mean by cheese is any solid milchix. So it's not only cheese, but a solid milchix. Now, that's already a little bit stricter over here because there's a lot more that happens over there. Your hands can get a little bit oily from that, etc., etc. Your mouth is full of cheesy stuff in your mouth. So now what you got to do, you got to first wash your hands, okay, because your hands could be milchicky, right? Got to wash your hands. Number two, eat solid food, something solid, like a cracker, so that whatever stuck to your mouth gets unstuck to the mouth. And you got to rinse out your mouth before you can eat any meat. So you had, let's say, a cheese Danish. You know, you have this on Shabbos sometimes. You're coming home, and it's a short winter, and you really want to have some ice cream, or you want to have a good piece of cheesecake, and then you want to have your fleishig meal, right? You want to have your dessert first, right? You ever do that, right? You have a good piece of dessert, but it's milchix, but you got to have a fleishig meal. So you could do that, but if let's say you had that cheesecake, now you want to have the meat, well, you got to wash your hands, rinse your mouth out, eat something solid first, like a cracker, a parv cracker, then rinse your mouth out, say the after blessing, and then move on. Now, if it's not Shabbos, you could brush your teeth, and that takes care of everything. Brushing teeth is as good as eating the solid and also rinsing out your mouth. The reason is you want to make sure there's no vestiges of any dairy in your mouth. Now, here's the famous question that's asked, 19. There is halacha with hard cheeses, aged cheeses, which have a very strong, pungent taste, and it has a much longer lingering effect. So the Gemara says that those things have to be treated like meat, as it were, meaning to wait 6 hours. Real hard cheeses require a six-hour waiting time. And, of course, what's considered a hard cheese? Just because it's called a Swiss cheese does not mean it is a hard cheese. So, therefore, I'll come back to that in a minute. Let me just finish. Point 20. Some foods that officially contain very aged cheeses, although you think it's a hard cheese, are often made with less expensive, fresh, non-aged cheeses. And because it's more costly to age cheese, because you have to store it for so long. So a lot of times they cheat. They say, oh, it's the finest of Swiss cheese is that, but they mix a lot of not fine cheeses. For example, eggplant Parmesan is frequently made with cheeses other than Parmesan. Many establishments said use mozzarella as the primary cheese here. Consumers are advised to inquire when purchasing such food. So not every hard cheese is a hard cheese. That's what I'm saying. Okay, now, so what are that? So therefore, I gave you the perfect website. It's right there. It's listed there. Let's see if it works when I click on it. Yes, yes, yes. It's going to work. There it is. And there's the list. So you want the list? You're not just get the website. It shows, I'll just show you an example. It gives you the cheese, let's say American cheese, aging period, made from cheddar that is aged 2 to 3 months or less, required period X. You don't have to wait. Okay? I don't even know what the next one is. A Panseller classic Swiss made doesn't have to wait either. Okay? I don't know all these fancy cheeses. All right? A Panseller extra Swiss made over 6 months, you do have to wait. Which one's a more common one? Which? Just tell me one that you... Parmesan? See how long the list is? Parmesan, regular straight Parmesan, you would have to wait. A real, but it's got to be a real Parmesan, not that they say it's Parmesan. A lot of stuff you'll buy from the store in the past, it's really, it's not Parmesan. So you have to ask when you buy Parmesan cheese, but that is a classic. Any other that really come to mind? Pepper Jack. It depends. In the American market, only 2 months. You don't have to wait. So there's a whole list, and I'm not going to go through it all. Romano, you do have to wait. But again, you got to emphasize, it's got to be the true Romano.
Such a canned cheese.
You know?
I guess you can look at it.
It smells. You know? So, yeah, a lot has to do with the smell. Also, if it doesn't smell pungent, then how aged could it be? Okay. All right. Anyway, back to our case over there. So that's a good list to have. It's always good. Certain lists are really good lists. You know, like the kosher liquor list is a good list to have. So it's right there. If you just go on our website, you don't have to memorize all this. Or you can probably just Google OU. It's the OU site. OU kosher and aged cheese. That's what it is. Okay, one other important halacha, and we'll close with this. What if you're not having, you have the cheese, but you've melted it down? And that takes away a lot of the effectiveness of it. So one not need wait after eating aged cheese that has been melted into another food as an unnoticeable component. So if you're mixing some of this Parmesan cheese in a much bigger dish, and it's there, but it's, you don't see pieces of cheese hanging around. It gets totally melted in as part of many ingredients in there. If it's an unnoticeable component, even if normally you'd have to wait 6 hours, you don't have to wait 6 hours for that. And that ends that. So now, God willing, I'll be on vacation for the next 2 weeks. The next time we would meet then would be the first Wednesday in February. Are people going to be in town?
Yes.
I don't know if it says Chaim vacation. I don't know what it is. But most people are in town.
Yes.
Okay, so the class will be that week. First Wednesday in February.
Thank you. So the 31st of January was that last Wednesday.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry then. 10th, 7th, oh, 31st. No, 31st of January. So we got enough people here? Yes?
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm getting too many shakes of the head. Three are not here?
Yeah.
Here, here, yeah. Here. here. And you're going to be back the next week?
I'm away for 2 weeks.
Oh. All right, so...
But there's enough that...
It's hard to decide then.
I think there'll be...
Everybody get my email.
All right. I'll send you. You know what? When I come back, I'm coming back on the 24th. I'm coming back on the 25th. So I'll send an email a few days before, and we'll just double check on that. So it'll tentatively be on. It'll tentatively be on unless something changes.